cosmos begins in microcosmic essence. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. Cosmos begins in microcosmic essence. And we sometimes wonder, where does life begin? Where does time begin? Where does essence begin? Where does existence begin? Where do we begin? And we wonder, where do we begin? Where in the world do we begin? How do we ever understand where we begin? Well, it's an interesting project. It's an interesting consideration to think about where we begin. And truly, where do we begin? Where do we begin with the essence of all things? Now, it doesn't really make a heck of a lot of difference. What is, and where we are, and all that ever can be, and all that ever will be, is done, and is done now. Now, it's just sort of interesting to think about it, interesting to consider, where does life come from, how does life come into being, and where does life come forth as? And we like to think that the tinier the essence that we understand, the greater the awareness that we have of who and what we really are. So if we can go into the tiniest form of substance, form of essence that can exist, that we can understand, then we understand something very, very wonderful. And then, too, we like to look out into space and look at the stars. We like to look at the action of the Big Bang Theory, as we like to call it. And as this Big Bang Theory exists for us, it takes that little nothingness and makes it into something. It takes that one little atom and bursts it forth into all the substance that it is, which is really quite great. And then, really, if we were to really understand about that atom, we would understand that that atom only went through one phase. The atom went through only one phase of its existence. It just went through the outer appearance phase. And out of that, we have the universe in which we live. And we think, wow, isn't that wonderful and expansive? But think more deeply. Within every atom are quarks and subquarks and micro-essences that we haven't even begun to interpolate and to understand, to define, to name. We haven't even begun to conceive of each possibility. Now, if the atom can be exploded, as scientists are doing, not necessarily exploding it, but if they can capture the energy that is within the atom, that's like capturing the energy that is within the shell. Now, what is within the shell? And that is the subatomic particles. What is, if within the shell is something even more minute, more finite, infinite, finite being small, but infinite being infinitely small? And it's quite something to consider. It sort of blows the mind when you really begin to think that within the atom is great and wonderful, and it's a magnificent thing, and it has tremendous energy within it. But the energy within the atom is not that which dwells within the atom's innards. In the atom's innards are the microorganisms, the microcosmic essence that we haven't defined as yet. But we're defining it little by little, giving it names. And I enjoy that the scientists are able to know that nothingness exists, because when something passes behind something and it is no longer seen, then it is nothing. Or when nothing passes in front of something, then When something is no longer seen, it must be that the nothing is something. But these are just didactic discussions that tickle the mind and make us sit up and think and take notice. We are so grandly made. We are a part of this absolutely magnificent universe, this absolutely magnificent essence. And we look at just the atom itself, and we say to ourselves, wow, how great that is. And then we look within the subatomic particles, the essence, the subatomic essence of within each atom, and we find that each one of these is an infinite number of times greater than the atom itself. And we say, how can that be, that it is such a tiny essence? Well, it's not the tiny essence that makes the difference. It's the reality that's within it that makes the difference. Who could have ever conceived that within the atom is enough energy to light the city of New York for a period of time? Who could ever conceive that? And how many atoms do we have within our body? And how many atoms do we fluff off every day as no longer useful? And how many atoms do we sparkle out? How many stem cells do we sparkle out? But a stem cell is not an atom. We might like to think of the stem cell as an atom, but it's not. A stem cell is a conglomerate of atoms. A stem cell is a whole combination of atoms. It is a number of life essences, of life forces, within the stem cell. And the stem cell is the undifferentiated cell that comes forth out of all the other cells in our body, waiting to be given new directions. And when the stem cell is given the old direction, it continues that way. And when the stem cell is given the old direction and put in with the old direction the idea of growing old, being sick, being limited in any way, then the stem cell takes on that aspect of life, which is okay, but it is not necessary. How can we, as our finite mind, how can we really don't even know any, we don't really know any of these subatomic particles. Scientists tell us about them, but they're not an everyday fare for us. How can we understand such things? How can we understand such magnificent subatomic particles? How can we imagine a universe so grand that just to think the human being is brought forth in such grandeur that it is? Looking at pictures of little babies that my brother and his wife sent me are just really glorious. They're just all tickly smiling. And of course, that's the way they should be. And you look at them and you think, what hath God wrought? What hath God wrought? What goodness has God brought forth? What goodness has magic brought forth? And you see, it's not just the baby, it's not just the body, but it's the eyes and all that the eyes entail and how the eyes interpolate what they see and shine forth what they are and how they think about it in the brain and how everything that we see with the eyes is contrary to what we really see, because the eyes view everything upside down and then they put things right side up again, and how they do these various things, science is yet understanding it. The hearing ability. We don't hear words, we don't hear things, we hear vibrations. And these vibrations are interpreted by the brain to be words or whatever they're supposed to be. And how magical that is. And how magical that we can take words and concepts to indicate what we have in our mind, what sort of thinking we're doing, what sort of thoughts we have, what sort of concepts and what sort of symbols we have in our mind, and speak them outwardly so they can be understood in one or more languages. How magical that is. I'm always delighted as I sit at the phone and I hear Ellen speaking to her grandchildren, and she speaks Italian to them. And then sometimes she's speaking to some other friends and she's speaking German to them. And sometimes she goes into a grocery store and she speaks to a little boy who speaks French. And the little boy is so delighted that Ellen can speak French, because here in America, not everyone speaks French. And Ellen speaks beautiful English. Now you see, all of these things she's able to do. And she does them without a blink of an eye. She does it just because when she hears French, it turns on her French syndrome. When she hears German, it turns on her German interpolation. And when she hears words she doesn't understand, then she thinks, now what language is that? And she has a right to ask such a question, because it does not fit in any of the patterns that she has learned or that she has revealed from within herself. Now, what about you? What about me? Is there magic in this world? Is there magic in this world that we haven't even begun to understand? There sure is. The cosmos begins in the microcosmic essence. And back and back and back to thought itself. And thought has no material about it, no substance to it. It has no essence to it that we can see, except that it is thought itself. Now, how do you define thought? How do you encapsulate thought? How do you say what thought is, and how you can describe it to someone else? That in itself is an enigma. That in itself is a difficult task, but yet it's done all the time. Because we relate our thoughts by our mind into words, and our brain brings them forth as something intelligible to ourselves and to the world. Kind of fascinating, isn't it? But this is what the absolute philosopher does. He loves to sort of whistle around in the in the fantastic qualities of the microcosmic essence. Isn't that an interesting term? Microcosmic essence. And that goes into subatomic and subatomic and subatomic. And I'm only using the word atomic because there are so many other words scientists haven't really settled down on what they're going to call all these other essences that are less than the atom itself. Not less than, surely, but they are the progenitors of the atom itself. And how great that is. Thinking like this causes our mind like working chess puzzles, like working crossword puzzles. It causes our mind to be active, to look at things from a different point of view and sparkle with it and say, wow, isn't that great? And you know, it is great. We live in a wonderful world and life is wonderful. So let's flow with that wonderful quality and really let it happen to us. And as you learn about these subatomic aspects of the essence of all life, let me know about it. Tell me your thoughts on it. Tell me your imagination on it. Because then, who knows what infinite pathways will be open for both of us as we think in this cosmic pattern. Have a good day. Have a fun day. Have a thoughtful day. And know that I love you. I love you. I love you.